You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
And
you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this fine but surprisingly warm weekend? Went to the farmer's market and, gosh, needed sunscreen, a hat. Oh, I saw a woman. A woman was shopping. She stopped. I think she was buying... She was either buying cheese or seafood, and she had on, she's an older woman, she had the most gorgeous parasol and the prettiest kimono, just a light kimono over jeans or something. And I thought, gosh, I love the farmer's market, and that's just those sorts of things. And then there was just a few minutes after I saw her, and there were all the people, you know, in their Sebastopol clothes. And then this woman walked by. She had really blonde hair, slicked back, and a very tight ponytail. She had on so much makeup, high heels, a very, very tight pencil skirt, and this very colorful T-shirt. It's like, what a crossroads. If you're not going to a farmer's market, you should. It's just so interesting and so delightful on every single level. Tonight we're going to be talking about local foods from a couple of really interesting vantage points. We're doing a two-part show, as Mouthful has often done, and we'll be having those guests in about, probably 10, 15 minutes. They are from Vallejo, and they're doing an experiment in urban farming. And Vallejo being a very interesting place in the Bay Area, I'm intrigued by what we will hear from them. In the meantime, we have some old friends here. Jim Reichardt. Welcome, Jim. I know that some of the equipment problems, got to share a microphone.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Famous Liberty Duck. And but you're here in a different capacity. And let's see, I got to do a little technical thing here. Just one second. I got to check with my engineer and make sure that my voice is coming through okay. Am I sounding okay? Okay, then we're having a little problem with my headphones, which keep cutting out. But I'll go on faith that the problem is only in my ears and not in yours. We also have with us Zachary Thode. I got it right. Welcome, Zachary. And I believe representing Slow Food Russian River, we have an old friend, Sandy Mace.
Thank you.
And we are talking about the 4-H Heritage Turkey Program and a benefit for the program that is coming up on November 6th. So who wants to give an overview of the project? Let's start there.
So the project is basically a bunch of 4-H kids that are growing and raising 225 turkeys for the Thanksgiving markets. And they raise the turkeys themselves at their places. And they raise them for the 7 months that it takes. They get the poults about April or March, depending on exactly
they get
when
the what?
They get the poults. That's what they call the baby
turkey. A poult? A baby turkey is called a poult?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And they're very, very cute.
Yes.
And we raise them up until a week before Thanksgiving, which is when we process them. And that's the basic scope of the project. Mm-hmm. And then the kids help at all stages along the way. They raise the birds, pay for the feed themselves, and help with the processing, help with the distribution, and they end up coming away with quite a bit of money.
What's the average number of birds that one kid would have?
They're averaging somewhere between 20 and 25 birds each.
So they have quite a number.
Yeah. And some people do more. Like we do about 75 to 100 birds. Because often people do have losses, and we have to raise additional birds to keep up with the demand. Because sometimes the kids get like 20 birds, and they'll just get 20 poults, and some of them will die. So we'll have to pick up the slack on that.
Sure. And when you say we, you're talking about?
My family, which is my brother and my two sisters and myself.
And where are you located?
We're in northern Sebastopol off of Mill Station Road.
Oh, what road are you on?
Mill Station.
Oh, you're on Mill Station. Yeah. I live very close to there.
Yeah, you do? Okay, yeah. Yeah, so we're there. We got the... We're about half mile off 116, and that's where we raise our birds. We got them in a big pen, and that's basically where we are.
And what breeds are you raising?
We got bronzes, Narragansetts, some bourbon reds, and I think we had one or two blacks this year, and that's all we got.
One of black?
Blacks.
That's the one I'm not. I'm familiar with all the others, but I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, they're just straight black feathers. Sometimes
they
have
pretty.
Yeah, they are. And sometimes they got a little bit of brassing. Sometimes they're called erroneously the Spanish black or the black Spanish. The true name of the breed is just the black turkey, although there's varieties in Europe that are called the Spanish black or the English black.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say that they're in pens, are they in pens that are fenced only on the side, or are they also covered?
They're also covered because these birds fly, and so we have to keep them in and keep the predators out.
Yes, and I wondered, I was going to ask if they had been open, if any of the wild turkeys ever visited, because we have a ton of wild turkeys.
Oh, yeah, we got wild turkeys hanging about all the time. There's actually this one wild female that's continuously hanging around our breeder pens, and she's just kind of become a fixture. She just hangs out. I don't know what she's doing, but she's there, and we've tried catching her on a couple. I've thought about catching her, and maybe tried once to get her in. We're still working on that, but she's kind of hanging around.
I've got the most interesting female, and I didn't have wild, there were no wild turkeys where I live until maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and then there were a few. And then there were a few more. And for about the last 5 years, there's been this one that's white. Yeah. And the feathers have a little black in them, but she's white. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she's the matriarch.
Yeah.
And she's just out there with all her little, they're not poults anymore, all her teenagers running after her. But I'd never seen a white wild turkey before.
Well, her color pattern sounds a lot like a royal palm. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that someone somewhere was raising a heritage turkeys and one escaped, so it's quite possible.
Oh, interesting.
Actually, we drive down around the Laguna area quite a bit, and we see all the wild turkeys out there, and every now and then we see a couple that are not wild turkeys. And
they just went bad.
We got some friends that live near there, and we're like, hey, look, it's old Tony's turkeys running around in the, running around in the marsh.
Now, if a turkey isn't processed, how long, what's the average lifespan of a turkey?
They can live for about 12 years. Well, we had one Tom. He was about, I think he was 8 when he died, and he was still quite viable. We actually had eggs that were laid shortly after he died, and they were still fertile. But they can live for quite a bit longer than that. I think, I'm not sure why he died, but he was just getting on the older side. But they can live for quite a long time.
Okay. Chickens can live that long, too. I know a few people have had 12-year-old chickens.
Yeah. We've got one chicken that's at least 12.
So interesting. So how long have you been doing this, you and your family?
We've been raising turkeys since 2004.
Mm-hmm. And the event that's coming up, this is a fundraiser for the project.
Yeah.
Who wants to talk about that? Is that you, Sandy?
Yes, thanks, Michelle. This is our fifth annual event that we are holding at Deloach Winery on Olivet Road. It's Sunday, November 6th, and we're lucky again to have a chef from the Encanto Restaurant in San Francisco, Chris Constantino, who is a friend of Jim's, so we were lucky to get him back. He did an incredible job with fixing the turkey three or four different ways last year. So Deloach has offered the site for us to have this event.
We're going to
have a wine and cheese reception first, and then the kids bring the five or six turkeys, I think we're going to have this year, right there to the site, and so the people can meet the turkeys and meet the growers right there, and then we auction them off that evening.
Mm-hmm. So they walk in. The turkeys are alive at that point.
One gentleman asked if he was going to have to take his turkey home last year that he bid on, and we said, no, we'll take care of that. Uh-huh. So we have a silent and live auction that supplements the dinner.
Uh-huh. And then also it says garden tours if the weather lets that happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do we know about the menu?
Chris is preparing a harvest menu where, it's going to be the turkey multiple ways, and then we've got some Barbados black-belly sheep that are raised, actually wild sheep in Marin that are going to be part of it, root vegetables, greens. Dominique Katera is doing pies for dessert.
Oh, Dominique. It's interesting. Yes. We've had Jean-Charles Poisset was on Mouthful two weeks ago, and he's, of course, the owner of Deloach. And then it's been a few weeks, but we had Dominique on as well. So it's all family here on Mouthful.
It all ties together. For the appetizers, we have Perbaco is doing a restaurant in San Francisco is doing some charcuterie and fatted calf from Napa.
So nice.
And Colette Hatch, Madame Fromage, is going to do the cheese. Uh-huh. So there'll be some cheese education, salumi, a great dinner, and some pies by Dominique.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a great time. And it starts at 3, continues until 7 in the evening, so you can run to your car and listen to Mouthful. Mm-hmm. The cost is $125. What is the best way to, I always wonder, because, I put things in the newspaper, and if you do brownpapertickets.com with the whole event information after, you end up with this really long URL. What is it the easiest way to tell somebody to search for the event? Google the event?
I think also if they go to our site, www.slowfoodrr.org, and we've got tickets available on our site.
Okay, so Slow Food RR stands for Russian River. Slow Food RR. I think I'm a member.
Yes,
I am. .org. Mm-hmm. And I assume there will be lots of Deloach wines.
We'll be pouring Deloach.
Mm-hmm. And any idea yet what some of the auction items might be?
We actually have talked to Bruce Adels and Nancy Oakes, and they're going to donate a pizza party up at their beautiful house.
Oh, nice.
So that should be really exciting.
Mm-hmm. We also have a cookbook?
I would like a collection of cookbooks. We have a winemaker's dinner at Shear Winery, and Bruce from Park Avenue Catering is going to do the dinner. And we also have a package of an evening in San Francisco with dinner and hotel accommodations.
So some nice items and a fun evening. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been to Deloach, it's really, really gorgeous there. And if the weather's nice, definitely see the tour. And, who knows? You guys might end up jumping in the pool.
Yeah, they're good partners to work with.
Yeah, they are. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to be writing about this event, too. I think it's a really great cause. Good luck to you, Zachary.
Thank you.
I'm always happy to see young people getting involved in farming. Do you see yourself continuing?
I see myself definitely getting involved in agriculture. I'm not sure where I'll end up, but this is certainly something I will consider very thoroughly.
Can I ask how old you are? Because I have no idea.
I'm 21.
Okay. You're sitting in, here in the studio, we have some chairs that are fairly low to the ground, and you have a very young face. You could have told me you were 14. You could have told me you were 23. And I said, oh, okay. Anyway, it's good to know you're getting involved in agriculture, and lots of good luck to you. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
I know you're so busy. It's great to have you in the studio. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
And I hope it's a fabulously successful
event.
Yeah, I hope
to see you there.
it means I would have to
that's right.
do something about Mouthful, but sometimes I do a pre-record. We'll see what we can figure out. And we're going to take a little musical break here, and we will be right back with our second set of guests here on the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Grapes are covering the grassland, they're buying up for family farm. this land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.
It's Mouthful. I am back with my second set of guests. And I should tell you, any of this information, about, especially about events that are coming up, anything at all that you don't write down, because I often hear stuff on the radio and think, I don't have a pencil, send me an email, catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also check Mouthful's Facebook page. I try to keep it up. I will post links to the things we're talking about tonight on Mouthful's Facebook page, and it is open to the public. So there you go. Also give you contact for this event at the end of the hour, like we always do here on Mouthful. So now we have in studio Rachel Hoff and Tom Ferguson, who are operating a garden on Maple Avenue in Vallejo near Benicia Road, which is my old stomping grounds. Maybe I didn't get the description exactly right, because you're cringing.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Isn't it Maple Avenue?
It is. Okay. It's Maple Avenue.
Okay.
It's more than just a garden. It's
yeah.
A
oh, yeah. You get a chance to go into all of the elaborate okay. detail. No problem. Okay. No, it's a very interesting situation. But the thing that piqued my interest about it initially, because I have to tell you, in the last few months, I have gotten so many books across my desk, urban farming, urban this, urban sustainability, and also lots of emails pitching stories. And then I saw Vallejo. And I was very intrigued, and so I want to hear your story about your connection to Vallejo. And it's not just my own interest in that I know Vallejo well, having gone all through school there, mm-hmm. And had a very interesting education there at the little Stephan Manor, which is on the corner of Georgia Street. Incredible grammar school education. But while I was growing up there, there was definitely a farming community. But Vallejo's consciousness was more with Sacramento, not with San Francisco. They would have cringed at the idea of urban. And my mother-in-law lived there up until she died a few years ago. And I would sometimes go over and I would go grocery shopping for her and that sort of thing. And Vallejo seemed very behind the times in what was available.
Oh, very behind the times.
Yes. And so that's the other reason, because it wasn't just that sort of Midwest consciousness they seemed to have when I was growing up, but there definitely seemed to be an odd consciousness, a more of a Walmart consciousness, and not a lot of awareness, say, over the last couple decades, that we're living in one of the most bountiful agricultural areas in the world. So how'd y'all end up in Vallejo, for starters?
Well, we were both not born and raised. Well, you were born and raised in Concord.
Yeah, I lived in Contra Costa County most mm-hmm. of my life. And then we ended up over in Napa for 2 or 3 years when we first got together. And then
what were you doing in Napa?
Working.
What sort of job?
I'm in electrical wholesale is what I do.
Okay. And I'm in landscape architecture.
So uh-huh. Both so. Construction fields. Uh-huh. And then, you know, the time came when we could afford a house and buy one. And unfortunately, we couldn't buy in Napa. You know, too expensive for us. So we found a place in Vallejo that we fell in. It was like, I think, the second house we looked at. We're like, this is perfect for us. Mm-hmm. Small
what
house.
What year was this?
This was 3 years ago.
Okay.
So we haven't been in Vallejo very long, but mm-hmm. we do love it. It's mm-hmm. a great city. We've met a lot of people who are liking what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, all of our neighbors are on board with what we're doing. Uh-huh. We're kind of working with the city council a little bit on certain initiatives and stuff going on there. Uh-huh. So
we're definitely more active in the community now that we live in Vallejo compared to Napa. Napa, we never really got involved.
Right.
With what was going on.
It's a hard
one
to break into. Napa.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So when we moved to Vallejo, the fact that we actually bought in Vallejo made us a little more willing to get involved.
Sure.
Now is our home permanently. So we wanted to make sure that we could do what we can to make it a better community.
Have you gotten involved at all with the Vallejo Farmers Market?
You know, we go there every Saturday. But the strange thing with the Vallejo Farmers Market is most of the vendors are from San Joaquin Valley.
I know.
And we've actually asked them if we could have a little information booth there, and they were not keen on that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted... I approached him one day, and I said, you know, we want to do an information booth on how to grow and raise your own food and stuff like that. And he's all, well, we already have a booth like that. The Vallejo Gardeners Club is here. And I was like, well, that's good if you want to learn how to grow roses.
Yeah.
I go, this is the farmer's market. We want to teach people how to grow food is what we want to do. And they never got back to us on it. They weren't.
It might have been a concept that just couldn't penetrate quite yet.
I guess I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of food booths, and then the farmers.
There's a lot of prepared food. There's a lot of really tacky
toys,
tchotchkes.
Yes.
But you know, there's really good music.
Yes, there
live.
Is.
There's incredible live music.
The last year, the music has gotten really good.
Yeah.
I
felt like it was
even
one
this
day
past
was
weekend was really really good.
I felt like I was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, it was just really great.
Yes, it was.
I like that it's a large market. It's much larger than even Walnut Creek's market.
Yeah. And we're fortunate it's open every Saturday.
Yeah.
You know,
now, does it go year round now?
Year round.
Yes.
Oh, it does.
Shine.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Okay.
Rain or shine. Uh-huh. I think this past year they closed down the last two weekends of December just because the holidays were on the weekends. So it works out for us because Saturday is the best day to go down there and enjoy it. This past Saturday was beautiful. It was sunny and
it was packed.
It was packed. A lot of people down there. So. And my son takes a martial arts class down there, too, on Saturday.
Oh, cool. How old is your son?
He's 14.
14.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's now talk about what is not a garden, but is really a very big agricultural endeavor there at your little house on Maple Avenue. I know some about it from what I've read on your website and in articles. And it's not the dog farm.
Dog Island Farm.
Dog Island, yes.
Yeah, we came up with the name because we're surrounded by dogs.
Oh, cool.
So,
okay.
And we have dogs ourselves.
What kinds?
We have two mutts. We have a Greyhound Pitbull mix and a German Shepherd Border Collie mix. Riley and Squeak. Uh-huh.
And you have other animals?
We do. We have, we've got three cats. And then we have chickens for meat and eggs. We have rabbits for meat. We have goats for meat and milk. We have bees for honey, obviously. And then we have turkeys for meat.
And did you have to get any special permits?
There actually aren't any. There isn't anything on the books in Vallejo regarding livestock.
Oh, great.
And I've known people that have talked directly with the code enforcement, and it comes down to as long as you're not hoarding animals, and there's no complaints against you, it's fine. And we make sure we talk with our neighbors before we do anything. Mm-hmm. And
don't have a lot of roosters.
No roosters. We don't have any roosters. And we also, you know, we share our bounty with them. And I think that's really important.
Sure.
And get to know them so that it's community building rather than just, you know, doing it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of communities do have ordinances such as, so I didn't know this, Santa Rosa has an ordinance against chickens.
Really?
And they're now trying to
change
that. People still have chickens, but they're trying to get up to speed with legislation, and there's a lot of bickering about it.
Really? Yeah. I remember when we first moved to Vallejo, there was this house on the corner right next to the freeway, really full view, and there was always ducks and turkeys and geese and chickens, like, wandering around their property. So we knew it was probably pretty okay to raise them since it was so out in the open on a main street.
I had an experience. I must have been four. I was four or five, and I won a duckling at the fair. And this duckling lived in my bathtub for a while. And then it came time I had to like give it away because it became a duck. And they took me out somewhere in that area. Yeah. And I later learned that it became dinner.
I still remember that farm. I could almost take you to it, but it's right out in that General Benicia Road area.
Okay.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so you started this no grocery store for a year project.
Yes.
Had you already been farming and decided you were then going to add that on top of it, or how did that work?
We started our operation with just a couple chickens and a nice big garden, but we never really intentionally kind of went down this, you know, farming path. It just kind of happened, and then
it's always the chickens. The chickens always start.
Chickens are a gateway animal. If you're
yes,
getting into it,
absolutely.
You know, it just. But it's, you know, started with the chickens and a big garden. Then we bought our house. It was like a really big garden and some more chickens, and it's like. Kind of unfolded from there with some goats and then the rabbits and then, you know, turkeys and ducks and bees and stuff. And then, you know, we saw a program, a documentary. It's called No Impact Man. It's about a family in New York City who went a whole year without making any garbage. Nothing left their apartment. Nothing really came into their apartment. They shopped locally. They took bicycles or public transportation wherever they went. And we're like going, well, if they could do that for a year...
In a New York apartment,
you know, we can go a whole year without going into the grocery store to buy food. And, you know, because we already had, like, this big garden, and we always had extra stuff that we gave the neighbors. And it was like, you know, we can do that. And the first 9 months, you know, we only kept it to farmers markets, and we only went to specialty places, butcher shops, stuff like that. And then we kind of challenged ourselves the last 3 months. We're like, well, let's not buy anything. Let's just all eat what's out of the backyard, or if we need something, we can trade somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out really good. We were kind of nervous at first, and then it just was like, oh, we can do this. And we didn't go to the restaurant also for a whole year, you know, so that worked. So the year is over, and we're going to stay the path for a while.
And I saw that you have on your website the second year or something that.
Another year.
Yeah, And we're gonna stay the path for a while, and, you know, we're going to let ourselves loose just a little bit. Like, we can go to a restaurant once a month, which is okay. And then going on trips is kind of hard, too, when you're doing this whole no year without groceries thing. You know?
Yeah, we learned on a trip to Ohio how difficult it can be.
Ohio is one of the most difficult.
Well, just getting there was a nightmare in and of itself.
Yeah.
We had plane delays. We had cancellations. It took us 24 hours to get home from Ohio. And so we had to allow ourselves to buy some food because there was just no way we could do it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
But, you know, we enjoy it. We really enjoy gardening and raising animals and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a little musical break, and then we're going to come back. I want to talk about some of the specific things you do on your little farm and some of the things you've learned.
Every dog, yeah, has his day now, and I'm going to see that you get yours. Had the key to my heart now, and I'm gonna change the lock on the door. One dog, one day now it's over. I'll be on my way, singing dog, dog, ooh, dog.
Bye.
song for my guests of Dog Island Farm, the song Every Dog Has His Day. This is on a compilation of Sly Stone, 1963 to 1965. Sly Stone, Sylvester Stewart, of course, a Vallejo boy. A lot of his family still in Vallejo, including his brother who has a church there. Sly, from what I hear, who's making a comeback. We're going to hear something new before the end of the show. I believe he's living in Napa.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's living in Napa. He goes down to his brother's church on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so I'm curious, what you went from a big abundant produce garden and chickens,
yes,
to a whole lot of other things. First of all, do either of you have big farming backgrounds?
Not at all.
No. You know, when I was younger, I used to go to my grandparents, you know, every other summer. And my grandpa used to have, like, this really big garden, you know, and he used to grow, like, these tomatoes that were bigger than my fist and squash that were bigger than my torso. You know, they had chickens and they had rabbits and they had some horses and stuff. And I used to watch him. I really wasn't into it when I was a kid, but I would watch him and look and see what he was doing. And, you know, growing up, I kind of picked up on some of that stuff. So when it comes to, like, gardening, you know, it's a lot of stuff I think back my grandfather and with the rabbits and the chickens and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff really does help nowadays, you know. I even dress the coyote. I'm out there every day with my coveralls on or my suspenders on, you know.
And... Well, my grandfather was a big gardener, and I learned a lot of gardening from him. He grew up on a farm in Iowa, and we would go back there during the summer when I was a kid, but I never really spent a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
I never really learned farming, obviously. He didn't raise any livestock, and then growing up, my mom always had a garden, but I was a teenager, and I didn't want to help, of course.
Of course.
But... as I grew older, you know, my love for plants obviously grew because now I'm in landscape architecture. But it wasn't until probably about 6 years ago when I started focusing on growing edibles versus growing ornamentals. And I started to think, you know, if I'm going to be putting money towards growing something, it's got to give me something back.
Yeah, other than beauty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you both work full-time.
Yes.
You have your full-time jobs.
Yes.
How many animals total do you have? Because, I mean, animals, even just a garden and getting it watered and all that stuff, I mean, that takes a lot of care.
We're on a really good schedule. We, you know, like all of our garden is all on automatic drip.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, I mean, it would take us 4 hours a day to water if we didn't. But, and then our animals are all on a very precise schedule and they all know the schedule. So that helps, you know, cut down the time to maybe an hour a day dealing with the animals.
Yeah. We have about 52,000 animals.
Counting the bees.
Counting the bees. So I'll give you that number.
And
we'll
bees,
go from there.
The bees are livestock.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Are. They are.
So. Which you got to love that bees are livestock.
Yes, yes. And our bees are actually quite nice.
They're quite nice. They're very, you know, they're an important part of a tool for the garden too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they help
sure.
pollinate and everything, and they're beautiful to watch. You know, when the sun's going down in the evening, and you're sitting out in the back, and we're having a glass of water or a cup of tea or something. You just see them flying right through the rays of the sun, and it's just it's beautiful.
Yeah, I have some people keep bees at my house, and I just love watching them. Yeah. They're fascinating.
Yeah, a lot of people are like kind of turned off about bees. You know, they see one, they want to swat at it. You know.
I think a lot of people confuse bees with yellow jackets, too.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of the same color. But, you know, bees want to leave you alone. They don't want to bother
they're working,
you.
They're busy.
Yeah.
They're
exactly.
working.
That's right.
Yeah. And if there's flowers around there, they're happy.
That's right.
So what have you learned in this year? How has sort of your perception of
it was
your
easier.
Life shifted?
It was a lot easier than what we expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was, once we did all the research and figured out where our food was coming from, it was just a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
It saved us time because we weren't going to the grocery store all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the farmer's market once a week. We had to be down there anyways because of Paul's jiu-jitsu class. So, and I don't know if you can even count that time. And then we would place an order with a buying club once a month.
So and what's the buying club?
There's a woman in Vallejo that I contacted, and she places an order with this organic kind of co-op.
Oh, okay.
Once a month.
Which one is it?
UNFI.
Okay, I don't know that one.
And she places the order, and it has to be like a minimum order, so some months we didn't get our food. But and that was tough when it's all staples, so we were able to get flour. There's a mill in San Francisco we would get flour from that sourced their flour from like Yolo County. So it all was fairly local, and so we would get salt and flour and sugar and stuff like that through her. But you know, again, we only had one time a month that we could place the order. So if we ran out midway through the month, we just kind of had to sit tight and wait.
Sit tight or figure somebody had some and then we wanted to trade, we can trade. And, you know, that's like the big thing nowadays is, you know, instead of spending money, it's like, well, what do I have to offer? I can, what do you got to offer me? You know, I need some flour. Well, I got a bag of apples or I got some cucumbers or something. Can we trade? And it works. We traded a freezer, an old freezer, and, you know, we got a couple bags of cooking chocolate, some oil, and another bag of fruit, and a couple other things from the lady. It was great.
Rice.
And a bunch of stuff. So trading's a really good thing, especially like when you find stuff. I found like a whole pallet of like used coffee gunny sacks. You know, people sell these things for $4 or $5 a piece when they're used. I got a whole pallet for free, and I'm going, I'm trading.
We traded them for fruit. We traded them for rice, and
fruit was the big one.
Now, what about the meat? So you have, for meat, you have chicken, you have goat, you have rabbit, and turkey.
Yes.
Who's doing the processing, the harvesting? Are you guys doing that yourselves?
Yes.
Not the goat.
Not the goat. The goat we took out just because it's a bigger animal.
Sure.
And it's a lot to handle for just a couple people. But the smaller ones, you know, we process or I process. She doesn't want me to say anything, but I don't mind. I mean, I take care of most of the business there on that end.
On that end?
Yeah.
And is that just,
it's something that we have to do. It's just, it's a part of life. And if you want to eat meat, this is something that somebody somewhere is doing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we figure that, you know, our animals, they're treated really well. They get good organic feed. Most of them are free range. They're, you know, they have a big area to move around. They're not stuck in a cage all day.
They get to be animals.
And if they get sick or they get injured, you know, they go to the vet. And you know how hard it is to find a chicken vet? Very,
really?
Very hard. Yes.
I spent $300 on a chicken once.
Yeah.
I'm not proud of that moment.
You know, I admire that. I have chickens next door to me. I live out in the country, and the two women next door to me, they have chickens, and a dog got several while they were gone, and then that poor girls were house sitting. But then Amy, I think, went into the house. And in just a couple minutes she was in the house, a dog came and got one of the remaining chickens and didn't kill it all the way. And she took it to the vet.
Yeah.
It didn't make it. Too many of the chickens' bones were broken for it to survive. But I know in Sonoma County, Sebastopol, people definitely take their chickens to the vet.
Well, when you're down in
Vallejo, I can
Vallejo,
see it being harder.
Take a new emergency vet in Concord.
So that's just the price that we paid because, you know, the animals are treated much more ethically that way.
Absolutely. I completely support this. I mean, I haven't bought food. The majority of my food comes from farmers markets. I've I just ended a CSA subscription for meat.
Okay.
And I loved it. And I only ended it because we have so many ranchers right now that are selling at farmers markets. And because I write, you know, I have to try a lot of them.
I
took a break from the CSA. But absolutely, not just knowing where it comes from, doing as much as you can yourself, and knowing that animal has a good life.
That's so
important.
I think it's very important. And, you know, I've gotten into hunting this last year, too, so that's another source that we have.
What sort of hunting?
Deer hunting. I'm planning a pig hunting trip next month. Turkey. I got my first turkey this year.
We're in turkeys.
A couple turkey more, season. I think, next week or the next week after. And then, you know, pheasant season's coming up or is here, duck season.
Duck season.
And so that's another way of doing it. You know,
how has your diet changed?
Well, there's no processed foods, obviously.
Were there before? Was it real transformation for you?
You know, not so much. I mean, if you look back maybe 6 years ago, it's been a huge transformation. Like when I was in college, it was rice and ramen. And top ramen. Yeah, it was awful. Awful.
Yeah.
And then I started to have problems with certain... I started to have an intolerance to soy and canola. So, since they're in everything...
But if you have to have an intolerance to something, what great things to not tolerate.
So, we started to eliminate boxed foods. That was kind of the guideline we went by.
Yeah.
And then I slowly learned how to make... I learned how to make bread, and then I learned how to make yogurt and cheese, and it just all started to kind of snowball into processing all of our own food mm-hmm. ourselves. Like, we make granola and sour cream.
Our dining room table is just covered with canned goods right now. I meant tomato sauce and barbecue sauce and pickles and just
hot sauce and ketchup and jelly.
All kinds of stuff. It's just like overflowing with the canned goods, which is a good thing because it'll last the whole year.
It's a great thing.
Yeah. You know, I mean, especially like tomato sauce is like a basic sauce for everything. If you mm-hmm. just make, you know, processed tomato sauce, it's almost like tomato juice. And mm-hmm. you just kind of boil it down a little bit and add some herbs and spices or whatever. You got barbecue sauce, you got pizza sauce, you got spaghetti sauce, ketchup.
Yeah.
We got all kinds of ketchup this year. And the quality of food is better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't been sick all year, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
usually around, you know, January, February, I hit a wall and I get sick. You know, the weather's sure. like really cold, and this year, nothing. You know, it feels really good.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you've missed?
Sushi. yeah, we actually, there's a sustainable seafood company that we can buy fish from, and we bought some sashimi grade fish there, and we tried to make our own sushi. It's just not the same. There's something about it.
Yeah.
It's just not the same making it yourself. So.
Well, I guess this next year we know where you'll be going for your monthly dinners and restaurants.
Yeah.
The sushi, I miss really, really good Mexican food.
Yep.
We try to make it at home, but, you know, unfortunately, it's not our culture, so, you know, I want to steal a little old Mexican lady and bring her into the kitchen and make tortillas and stuff for us.
Because
we just can't figure out that good technique or the good mole sauce.
It takes a while to get that technique. You can get the right ingredients and you can get the tortilla press, but still, I think you have to make like 1,000 before you're really getting it right.
I think so.
I've nailed the flour tortillas, but I can't seem to get the corn tortillas down.
Yeah.
Now, what about... what you drink?
Water.
A lot of water, and we drink a lot of milk right now too, especially with mm-hmm. the goats. We drink raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people get freaked out with goat milk because they're like, goats, they stink. And
your brother won't even try it.
My brother wouldn't
fresh
even try
goat
it.
Milk is so good.
It's so good, and it's got the sweet quality to mm-hmm. it, and it's just.
And we actually raise African pygmies, which aren't a dairy breed, and so they have. They don't produce, obviously, as much milk as mm-hmm. a dairy breed, but they produce a much richer milk,
mm-hmm.
and so it doesn't get that goaty flavor in it.
Mm-hmm. Do you make butter? Goat butter?
You know, I haven't made butter yet. The nice thing about the pygmy goat milk is it does separate a little bit, so I can skim the cream uh-huh. off. Not enough to make butter, really. It took me 5 months to get like 2 cups of cream.
Not yet. Something we might work
on.
Though.
And then we don't have a cream separator. If I got a cream separator, I could probably do it a lot easier and quicker. Uh-huh. But I haven't made butter. We didn't make ice cream, which was phenomenal. And we've made sour cream.
Yeah.
So
really good.
And were you, before you started this, did you drink much wine, beer, that sort of thing?
My mom's a big wine drinker, so we drink a lot of wine when we're at her house.
Yeah.
We do make beer.
You do?
Yeah, and I also make hard cider. So,
oh, okay, cool.
It's a lot of water during the day. I go uh-huh. through 2 or 3 of those 1 liter bottles. Well, the same bottle, I just keep filling it up.
Sure.
So, a lot of water during the day.
Basically water and milk.
Yeah. I actually haven't had a soda since Thanksgiving last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been, you know, we started our experiment, but we went to Wyoming for Thanksgiving, and, you know, we didn't buy any food while we were there, but her dad had, like, you know, some sodas in the refrigerator. I'm like, oh, I want a Coke, and, like, it just doesn't taste good anymore. You know, you just go, wow, I can just kind of taste all those chemicals that are in there and all the preservatives. And it's like, I just stick with water and wine and, you know, some beer once in a while.
Yeah. So you're doing some sort of video cast, right?
No, we actually, not really. We had a documentary done on us, just a short 6-minute doc through Whole Foods. They came out for 2 days and filmed us and our story.
Okay, yeah, it was real good. I got some PR about that, but I was really confused about.
Yeah,
it didn't quite make sense since I thought, okay, so you guys are you have your own series?
No,
that's what it sounds like.
It's the show is a series. It's called Grow: A Story of an Urban Farmer.
Right,
and so we were in it, and then two of our good friends were also featured.
Where are they from?
Esperanza is in Oakland. She runs Pluck and Feather Farm. And then Heidi is in San Francisco, and she has the Itty Bitty Farm in the City.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and there was also a big article about you in the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yes.
Yes.
What's the attention been like?
We've gotten a lot of attention lately. We were on Cron last weekend, Cron 4.
Mm-hmm.
We had NBC show up at our door unannounced.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. We had...
That would make me unhappy.
We had CBS come. They were announced. They let us know they were coming.
Were you able to do something with NBC?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it was those... those were 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
We were in the Vallejo Times-Herald. We were... Time.com had an article on us last week. We were on the front page of Yahoo.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been...
And has that... what have been the repercussions of that or the results of that?
I don't know a whole lot because I don't get on the website and the emails too much. You know, I can just kind of see some things, but... a lot of people are recognizing, especially locally, at the farmers market and the businesses downtown. They're like, "You guys are doing a good job. Thanks for bringing this positive thing to Vallejo." And it's been really good for the most part. The people that we can talk to, you know, obviously you have anonymous people online who write bad things about people.
Avoid the comments on every article.
Yeah,
I avoid the comments on all articles.
Yeah,
you know,
that's why it's anonymous.
Yeah, it just seems to be a place for people to vent no matter what the topic
is. I just figured that if somebody's interested in what we're doing and really likes what they're doing, they're going to come to our blog and comment there. Yeah. And everything there has been absolutely positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's been a couple weird things where people are like trying to advertise their stuff.
Oh, yeah. But you have to approve comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, on our Another Year Without Groceries blog, I don't approve comments. It's on our Dog of Island Farm blog that I do approve comments because... That's where the real wackos can come out.
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone who has a blog, because I've had a blog for about a year, and I approve every comment. I correct punctuation, grammar, spelling, and capitalization before I approve a comment. And I don't let people advertise things, and I don't let people be snarky.
Exactly.
It's like, you know what? It's my blog.
Yeah.
Well, I'm all for debate. So if somebody wants to come on and be snarky, I'll allow them to be snarky. And I will comment back.
Mm-hmm.
But if they push the envelope too far, then I'll just shut them down.
Yeah, I'll let people debate.
Yeah.
But if somebody's nasty,
exactly,
you know, if they make a good point and then go on to be nasty, I'll just delete their nasty part and let, you know, their comment go.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm hoping that something happens, whether it's the end of anonymity or something, so that it's not just a place for people who need to vent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say the trolls live under the article instead of the bridge now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the blog is also there to help people. That's kind of like one of the biggest things that we want to do is we want to help. We're not pros at this, but you know what? We have enough knowledge and experiment to help people.
I saw that you were offering, I think you have a sliding scale. You'll come to someone's house, meet with them, and help them get started.
Yes.
Talk about that. I thought that was, how far will you go?
We're in Vallejo, so we had somebody contact us from Middletown. We were going to go to Middletown, but
they never got back to us. And we were willing to barter with them.
Yeah, we were willing to barter and do something with them. We've already done one lady, Benicia. We have another one we're going to go next week. I think, you know, if it's within the Bay Area.
Okay,
you would
go in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I don't think I want to go more than an hour and a half drive away just to do an urban farm.
Would you trade for wine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
just yeah. curious.
Because, you know, a lot of people, they this good idea is like, oh, I want to become a farmer, or mm-hmm. I want to grow my own food and raise my own animals. And sometimes people, they just kind of jump into it full bore. And they end up having so many animals or so much stuff that they can't handle it.
Yeah.
You know, and then
everyone suffers.
Everybody exactly. suffers.
The and neighbors that, suffer. The animals suffer.
And we did ours. Ours was a step. You know, we had a couple chickens, a couple goats.
You know, it took us 6 years to get where we're at.
Yeah.
So it wasn't mm-hmm. overnight.
It wasn't overnight.
Mm-hmm. We would take on something. And then when we felt that we were comfortable enough with that and we still had plenty of time, then we'd go on to the next thing. And, you know, we both work full-time jobs. We have the animals, we have the garden, and we still find time to go to community meetings and hang out with
shows.
Our friends.
Radio shows.
Hang out with our friends. I mean, we spent the day today in Mendocino.
We went mushrooming.
Yeah, we went mushroom hunting. That's also another thing that we like to do. We like to kind of forage, especially locally. But, you know, the good mushrooms are up the coast, so we went out and got some good mushrooms today. Mm-hmm. Got a couple pounds worth, so it was mm-hmm. worth the trip. And
How do people get a hold of you? Let's do all the contact information. So the Dog Island Farm website is?
It's dogislandfarm.com, and our email address is dogislandfarm@gmail.com.
Okay. Dogislandfarm, as it is spelled, @gmail.com.
Yes.
And is that the best way?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
And so if people wanted to say, hey, come out to my house in Occidental, I'd really like to engage your services.
Yes.
Can we do
oh,
that?
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. We would like to keep more of it as much, you know, towards the Bay Area as possible.
Sure.
But if someone's, you know, wanting to do it up here this way, uh-huh. we would come.
Oh,
you
so
know, we want to do more of the urban.
We think of this as the Bay Area.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny because, you know, we're in Vallejo and it's like, oh, it's North Bay. Well, not according to Craigslist because it says East Bay right here.
They always call Vallejo East Bay. I think of Vallejo, Napa, and Sonoma, the counties,
yeah, but
as
Napa
North
doesn't
Bay.
Want to have anything to do with Vallejo.
No,
let's get this straight.
It's funny, my second child was born in Napa, and we drove from Vallejo to Napa to get there.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take very long.
No, it
doesn't. Very long.
20
she
minutes.
Have been born.
No,
on
we work. We work in Napa, so it's like, you know, 10-minute drive, 15-minute drive. So,
okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for driving over here, for stopping here on your way home. Really interesting stuff that you're doing. Maybe sometime I'll let you know when I'm coming over to Vallejo.
Okay.
So I have some friends that I'm going to be visiting over there.
Okay.
Visiting.
I like to say
soon.
Too that if people want to get into urban farming, the biggest thing I could tell you is don't go broke from doing this.
Oh.
There's
no,
a lot
don't
of people.
Do that.
There's a lot of people out there that want to go the full bore method and just buy the biggest and baddest things out there, and that's not why we're doing this. We're doing this to save money and to eat healthier. That's our biggest thing.
To eat healthier, and it's good for you. Clearly, it's good for the animals, and it's good for the environment.
That's right.
It's a great thing to be
yeah.
doing on every level.
Oh, yeah.
But I would think to go out and buy all the fancy stuff defeats most of those purposes.
I know a lot of people that do that, too.
Yeah.
You know, we buy very little, and, like, everything we make is from reused materials.
Yeah, we scavenge. We get, you know, used conduit for trellising, the burlap bags, PVC pipe. We can get, you know, if you look hard enough, you can find it for
making
free.
Making potato boxes out of pallets.
Yeah.
Oh, there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. We found we're lining idea. All of our beds with free stone that we're
yeah.
getting from a friend's junkyard.
I made the, we call it Turkey Town, which is where the turkeys live. I made those out of pallets. 3.5 hours. Some $50 worth of framing material and some chicken wire, and had a full 10 or I think it's 10x8 structure.
Wow.
I can walk in, don't even have to duck or anything.
It really helps that you have those construction skills in a big way.
Yeah.
I wanted to have chickens, and it's like, I don't have anybody to build me a chicken coop. And if I tried to build it, the raccoons would get in the first night. So. Anyway, on that note, we are just about out of time, and we actually don't have time to play that Sly Stone song. But if I can grab it here, Sly Stone has a new CD out. It's called I'm Back, Sly Stone Family and Friends. It's got some interesting people. It's got Jeff Beck on I Want to Take You Higher, Johnny Winter on Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again, Ray Manzarek on Dance to the Music. Anyway, a Vallejo boy made good, went bad, has come back. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hope to talk to
thank
you again
you,
sometime
man.
Soon.
Go Vallejo.
There you go. And let's see, next week I will be off chasing ghosts and goblins and such things, actually, with some friends from Vallejo. It is my holiday. Halloween is. It is also Mouthful's 16th anniversary a couple days later. So on November 6th, we will have our annual anniversary show. Have a great week. Visit your farmers markets. Be good to yourself. Be good to each other. And meet me back here for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour on KRCB.
Awesome.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, my children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing, to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Listen to what the preacher said.
To the Lord, praise his name.